In 5, 4, 3, 2.
Defying the laws of the universe. Traveling across the globe. Giving up life and liberty. Finding the real people. Finding the truth. This team will stop at nothing to tell your story. Decades in the making. Finding the people behind the ads. Ad Phantom has arrived.
A little over the top?
Yeah, just a little.
Whatever, just roll with it.
All right, here we go.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Ad Phantom Show. I'm Ryan.
And I'm John.
And we're your hosts for this wonderful, epically produced talk show. And this show is the show where we talk to real people and find their real stories and share them with you. This episode, we are excited to have with us Rachel Oring, who is a writer and comedian. And then after that, we have our special musical guest. But first, we have to take about 4 minutes to waste your time in high anticipation of our special guest.
Right.
Who is a picky eater.
Yeah.
Which we're going to talk a little bit about as well. I don't quite understand picky eaters, John. Maybe that's because I have a little bit of a weight problem. If I was more of a picky eater, I could probably, wear that Speedo that I bought last year.
I'm saying you should just wear it with style. Just buy a cowboy hat and some boots.
Like that episode of The Simpsons where he's putting on the Speedo and it keeps disappearing. He's like, hey, where'd it go? Yeah, I'm living proof that that's possible.
Oh, now I can't get that image out of my head. You guys are so lucky this is recorded. Okay. I don't deal well with picky eaters. Actually, because of that, I'm going to this chili cook-off for this trunk or treat celebration.
That sounds terrible. Terrible. It's like, okay, I'm doing it for 100 people, so I can't have onions. I have to have, 80-20 hamburgers so it's fat enough so that people enjoy it.
Right, right. So I've decided, you know what? I'm just going to go for broke. The spice shop I always go to here in Raleigh, they just got in some ghost chilies.
Ghost chili? What's chili? Is that like a Halloween surprise?
Yes. I'm literally going to call my chili ghost chili. It's the world's hottest chilies. They used to be illegal to import in the United States because they thought people would hurt themselves on it. If you want a good time, go to YouTube and type in ghost chili eating and you'll just laugh so hard you cry. Anyway, so I'm just going to grind it up and use that instead of chili powder in the chili. And one ghost chili is maybe 6 habaneros.
My gosh.
So, and you can only get them in the dried or smoked forms.
And they used to be illegal?
They were illegal. The only reason you can get them now is because cops use them in their crowd control devices.
Okay, so we recommend for our listeners, if you can't find them at a shop, just visit your local police station, ask for a few, sprays of pepper spray in your chili.
Can you blast your pepper spray in my chili? So, yeah. But other than that,
do that and record it. That's on our next episode, ladies and gentlemen. Right. We're going to ask cops to just spritz our chili.
Send us videos. Otherwise, it didn't happen. Now, speaking of food, I got a really good bacon recipe for you.
Oh, excellent. Is it a ghost chili wrapped in a piece of bacon and you just got to pop it in there?
No, it's close to it. My daughter loves tater tots. It's one of her favorite things. And so in honor of her, I decided to try something new. And I was like, well, tater tots are boring. What if we wrap them in bacon? So that's what I did. Wrapped in bacon, roasted them in the oven, and they're amazing. And they're they're the perfect meal for watching the baseball playoffs or football.
I love how health conscious you are. It's like, tater tots, how can I make this healthier? Let's
wrap them in bacon. I love tater tots.
Give me your bacon tots, man.
Source some of them bacon tots.
Oh, that sounds good. Well, ladies and gentlemen, before we waste any more of your time with bacon recipes and – actually, the bacon recipe wasn't a waste of time. But
it's totally worth your time.
We're very serious, and we really appreciate how much time and effort you give to listening to the show.
That's right.
So now we get into serious mode, and we're going to talk with a comedian, Rachel Oring. Ladies and gentlemen, to support Ad Phantom, make sure to visit adphantom.com. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and any podcaster. You can find us on Blueberry and any number of sources. Visit adphantom.com for more information. We'll be right back after this quick break with Rachel Oring.
Ha ha ha. It is fortuitous that you will be here for this Halloween season.
The advent.
John, what the hell are we doing?
I don't know. I'm trying to get everyone in the Halloween spirit.
We should hold a contest.
Ooh, I like contests.
A Halloween Ad Phantom fan contest. What do you think?
I like that. So, kind of a trick-or-treat situation we got here, folks. If you could trick your friends, well, if you can get 25 of your friends to like the Ad Phantom web page, we'll treat you with one of the prizes that we've got from one of our great sponsors.
Yeah, first prize is a Logitech HD webcam from our partner Logitech. Second prize being $20 in iTunes gift cards. And we're nice. Even rewarding third, fourth, and fifth place because, you know, we're all about rewarding the losers. I mean, the semi-winners with $10 iTunes cards. Hey, that's a pretty good reward for not
it's
doing
not
a
bad.
Lot.
That's right. It's enough to get you a couple apps and maybe a really bad Halloween album.
Again, these prizes are provided by our partners Apple and Logitech. In order to qualify, all you have to do is go to your Facebook while you're logged in, do a search for Ad Phantom at the top, you'll find our fan page, and right at the top, there's a little like button on that page. Hit the like button and you become a fan, invite more people, and then you become eligible for the prizes.
That's all you gotta do.
Pretty simple. AdPhantom.com. Ad Phantom. Finding the people behind the ads.
I liked it.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. In this segment, we have the pleasure of interviewing yet another great person eager to share their real experience and real stories. Joining us this episode is comedian and writer Rachel Oring.
That's right. We have Rachel with us today, and Rachel grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina. She is the daughter of a chef. She eventually went to the University of North Carolina, where she got a degree in journalism. Around this time, she wrote for the Daily Tar Heel, where she actually won an award for her piece titled El Gigante Conquered Me. She also started actively blogging and pursuing comedy writing, which led her to her stand-up career she's got going on right now. She's also running the blog Gagging Towards Bethlehem, which I hear is being turned into a TV show, which is pretty exciting.
Thanks for joining us this morning, Rachel.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
My first question is the basic, most common question for most comedians. Who is your favorite comedian? Who inspires you through comedy?
My favorite comedian is Margaret Cho. I have been watching Margaret Cho on television since we started getting Comedy Central, so probably when I was about 10. So, yeah, a 10-year-old watching Margaret Cho.
Yeah, I'm sure that had a really big influence on you.
Yeah, a great influence. I also really love Louis C.K., George Carlin, Chris Rock. You know, I love Jerry Seinfeld, like really observational comedy. Mitch Hedberg is also one of my favorites, and every joke I hear of his ever, I just want to kind of stab myself for not being smart enough to think of that.
I have a bit of a love affair with Louis C.K. The weird thing about him is, like, he was funny when I was a kid, and now that he's, like, an adult and has kids, because he has two daughters, and I now have a daughter, and his jokes are even more funny now that I'm, like, have a family and stuff, because, oh, man, yeah. So I do have a question. Being that your favorite comedian is Margaret Cho, there's that stigma where people say women aren't funny, like women comedians aren't funny, which I don't entirely agree with. I think that based on the kind of stereotypes of masculinity and femininity, it doesn't bode well for women growing up with that kind of rambunctiousness. They're like, that's not very ladylike. And I think most of the best female comedians don't have that. But you're not Jewish and you're not a minority. You're not a homosexual. I mean, you really have some pretty heavy hits against you already. So how do you combat that?
Not being funny. Well, I solved that all by making most of my jokes about my vagina. So, see, I still have that.
So you do have that.
At least I'm not a white dude.
Right, so, right. Nick, I at least have the fat thing going for me because people are like, oh, he's funny because he's big.
Yes.
So now I know if... Go ahead.
I'm sorry, were you done with your question there?
Yes, that was good.
Okay, can I answer now? No. Well, so... I don't really think of it that way, and I think a lot of comedians don't think of it that way, and I feel like if you're sort of basing your comedy on sort of one thing about you that you can make fun of, I feel like you're probably not exploring the depths of you know, what you're writing and how funny you can be. I think a lot of my comedy is I do really raunchy material, and I do a lot of, like, really geeky jokes. And, you know, if you read my Twitter, it's nuts. And I think a lot of it comes from I get up on stage, and I'm this short, like you said, this short white girl with dimples, and I sound like, you know, a 10-year-old. And I get up there, and I start cursing, and, you know, I start making jokes about... And I think a lot of my comedy comes from the surprise that I think people aren't expecting me to be funny, and they're not expecting me to sort of go there. But I do, you know, and I try to explore all aspects of my writing as far as, you know, and I'm still in that phase where I'm still kind of finding my voice. So for me, like, I don't necessarily think not being in any sort of minority or not having any weird thing about me, I don't think it hinders my comedy at all because, you know, right. I'm able to make jokes about observational humor and tie it into my femininity or tie it into my geekiness. And, you know, I think a lot of people enjoy it. I hope so.
No, I think you're funny. Otherwise, I wouldn't have asked you to be on the show.
Yeah. With those challenges, what made you decide to become a comedian in the first place?
A funny person. Most comedians will say, like, they were the class clown, and I really was no different. I was always the funny girl, and so, you know, it's like, it was kind of a weird thing, because I was always the funny, kooky one in my circle of female friends, but I also had a lot of male friends, and, you know, it's like I could never quite hang with, like, the dude class clowns, you know? Because they were really outgoing and really brash, and you know how the class clowns are. They just bug the shit out of everyone. Yeah. They don't shut
That's
up.
True.
And, you know, I wasn't like that.
John was a clown.
Yeah.
We're
kind of elitist, especially if another funny person tries to step on our territory. We're like, wait a minute, I'm the class clown. This is...
Oh, yeah. Mix that sort of attention grabbing with high school and all mm-hmm. that stuff. I'm sure if another funny person tries to get in the mix, you're like, hey, now, this is my right. role, and this is why...
Yeah.
This is why people talk to me. You need to back the...
Right, right, but, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I was always the funny girl, and I was totally cool with that. You know, I had a lot of guy friends. I hung with the guys. It's funny because I never really thought of myself as funny, and I have this really vivid memory. I was in eighth grade, and this girl who I was sort of friends with, but who was popular, so I was pretty mm-hmm. sure she secretly hated me.
Right.
She turned to me one day, and she was like, Rachel, you're the funniest person I know. And it totally hit me off guard because I never really considered myself funny, again, because I wasn't rolling with the dude class clowns, and that sort of cemented for me in my mind. I was like, I am funny, and it's just sort of grown from there.
I think you're right. Everybody kind of looks at it as, hey, I was the funny person, so I should go into comedy. But there's more to it than just that. So what are some essentials that you think make a great comedic performance other than simply just being the funny person? What other work goes into it?
Writing, having good material and being able to deliver it. I have a lot of friends who were really funny together, and we have a good time, we make each other laugh, and it's like when I got into stand-up, they sort of did that thing where it's like, oh, I could totally do that, and I sort of was like, no, you can't. You're funny because the people around you are funny, and you sort of play off of that, which is fine, but that's not what a stand-up comedian does. If you're funny because you play off of other people, but if you sit down to write a joke and you can't think of anything, maybe don't do stand-up. I see a lot of comedians who do a lot of crowd work and right. who aren't necessarily good at it because they're expecting the audience to sort of inject that funny element that they can play off of. They're there to see you be funny, you know?
Right.
For me, I hate it when comedians sort of use crowd work as a crutch. But, you know, writing. If you can't write a joke, then you shouldn't do stand-up. Like,
that's true.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah. I definitely agree with everything you said. You can also see it a lot of times, especially on some of those newer comedy specials where you'll get like a Live at the Gotham where you'll see a bunch of comedians and a lot of them to get their initial joke, they fall back on what they're familiar with. Like they'll make an appearance joke or something. They'll make a funny step, you know, on the stage or something like that to get the ball rolling to kind of soften that. And I think that when they get lulls, they go back to what they were, you know, kind of their defense mechanism. But with that said, you bring me to a next good point. In your words, what exactly is a stand-up comedian?
I think a stand-up comedian is someone who can get on stage and who it's obvious that, this is hard to explain, but it's obvious that they sort of attempted to hone their craft. And this sounds really weird, but I was actually in a comedy competition once, which if you guys want to talk about how much I hate those later, I could go on for about an hour. And they didn't have enough people that signed up. So they tried to pad the lineup with like improv people who like took a stand-up class once. And which is fine, but it was obvious that they sort of got up on stage and just tried to do improv on stage and basically just kind of threw jokes out there and were like, oh, hey, cool. And to me, that really pissed me off because, you know, I worked really hard and I honed my set. And I feel like as a stand-up comedian, what makes a stand-up comedian is the energy that you put into it. You have to write. It's about being a writer, too. I mean, delivery is a lot of it, and stage presence is a lot of it. But at the end of the day, if you're up on stage and you don't have the material, it doesn't matter how charming you are or how good you are, you know, like making faces or making fun of the audience.
Right. So what do you do to practice and hone your skills? Just, you know, meeting with friends and making jokes? Do you stand in front of the mirror? What do you do?
I talk to myself in the car. That is where I would say 90% of, like, my honing my material happens is in the car. I'm one of those people, I talk to myself in the car anyway and have, like, imaginary conversations. Like, if you put a camera on me in the car, you would think I, you know, was schizophrenic. It's awful. But it actually has come in handy now that I do comedy. I'll say bits over and over again because it's really important. You can write as much as you want, but you have to say it out loud and you have to know how things flow and how they sound, and you're able to sort of practice and hone. And then it doesn't sound as weird when you say it out loud.
Is that where the invisible friends in your car talk back? Because that's, I think, where you're crossing the line there.
Right.
Yeah. Well, there's actually an invisible toddler tied up in my trunk, and she gave me really great feedback.
Oh, interesting.
I can see that.
She's got a really good sense of comedy, so I like that.
I think comedy buddies are important. Yeah, you made a good point with the whole talking to yourself in the car. Patton Oswalt's new album, he has a joke about how if you were to listen to him in the car, he would just sound like a crazy person. And I think, you know, part of that is that he's been doing comedy since the late 80s. And obviously those little tricks where you just basically write everything down. And even if it's not funny, you know, you can build off of stuff. And I think saying it out loud really does help.
Saying it out loud, it gets your brain sort of, and it gets your brain in sort of that riffing mode, like when you're with other people and you build on stuff. Like, you have to sort of get your brain in that sort of loosey-goosey mode where you're able to sort of take it in a different direction. And yeah, I found saying it out loud helps tremendously.
What do you feel is your greatest weakness with comedy at this time?
I will tell you right now, my greatest weakness is having kernels of ideas that are not fully formed, and I take them to the stage and I don't know, it's like I'll have a setup and I know where I want to take it, but I don't have that in between. That's when I bomb, is when my jokes are not fully formed on stage, and when I get to the stage and I have the setup. I've done this so many times. I'll have the setup and I know where I want to go with the punchline, and it's like the minute I get done with the setup, I'm like, well, how do I get there? And that's where the talking to myself in the car, that's the middle part, the getting there, that to me is the most important. That's my greatest weakness, is I have a tendency to rush stuff and be like, this is really funny, and then I get on stage and I'm like, this is not a joke, this is like a tweet. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Have you ever frozen up on stage?
Yes. The first time I bombed, it was funny because I was performing at the place where I took the class, and then the stand-up class who had gone after me, it was their, like, showcase night, and it was frigging packed. Like, every seat was full, and I was like, holy shit. Because at my show, there were 6 people, and 5 of them were my mother and my brother and, like, 2 of my friends who already were working at the comedy place and were there for free. So I freaked out, and I was like, oh, my God, I must be awful because, like, none of my friends came to see me. And so, like, I was like, and if they stay for the show, like, it's going to be packed, and I don't know what to do. And I got up on stage, and I went after this amazing guy. He's my friend. He's hilarious. His name's Cody Hughes. He, of course, killed it because he is a brilliant writer. and I got up on stage and I started my jokes and my mind just went blank. Literally, I lit myself. I was like, oh, well, that's my time. I gotta go. See you later. I was on there for like a minute and I'm pretty sure I cried as I ran off stage. Oh. It was horrible. But you gotta bomb too to know how it feels to do better. And so that was the worst. Bombing was my first one. It was awful.
That's gotta be rough.
Yeah.
All right, well, we need to take a short break, but we'll be right back with more from Rachel Oring. Hello, everyone. We're going to talk about a couple of product reviews that you can find on adphantom.com. Joining me is John.
Hi.
My compadre, my...
Brother from another mother, your hetero life mate. Well, I don't know. There's a lot of...
hetero life mate. I like that. All right. And we got a couple of product reviews for you today, real quick. First one I'm actually pretty excited about and I'm going to get myself. It is called the Compendium of Chutneys, Pickles, and Sauces. Ooh. Now, you can always find great recipes online. You can always go to your local bookstore and buy some cookbooks. This is a great ebook that you can buy. It's got over 250 recipes, all in about 186 pages. Specifically for chutneys, pickles, and sauces. The best thing about it is it uses a lot of fresh ingredients and has a lot of things that you may have laying around the house you can add to turn into a great sauce that you can add to any dish. I'm pretty excited about it. The best part about it, John, is it's pretty cheap.
Yeah. How much does it cost?
It is $9.95. right now, and again, that's for over 250 recipes, all in one electronic format that you get immediately. There's also a bonus book that you get that is some additional sauces and stuff. So all in all, as far as ebooks go, I mean, it's $10. But come on, this is nothing.
Yeah. Does it have any pictures?
It's full of pictures. In fact, I believe every recipe has pictures. I haven't bought it yet. I'm going to buy it myself because I thought this was pretty excited.
Awesome,
I was actually hoping that someone else was going to buy it for me. Like you, John. Why don't you buy it for me?
I'll put it in your stocking. It'll be my digital stocking stuffer for you.
Yes, I'm so excited.
Is it in a format that, like, is it a PDF or is it in a format you could put on a Kindle or a Nook?
It's an ebook. They usually come in PDFs, and this particular one, I'm not sure on the exact format. I can tell you as soon as I get it or as soon as you buy it for me. I'm not sure. Going to wait until Christmas, so I'm going to get it immediately. Put it on some of those great Halloween things. It's very secure. When you buy this one, you're getting it through an online marketplace that will handle it. If by any chance you don't like the whole thing, there's a 60-day money-back guarantee.
Nice.
I got to say, you're kind of cheap if you're going to be returning something for $10, but whatever. I think it's a great a great thing. Plus, you get the 100 jams, jellies, and preserves for free.
Ooh. What did that one get?
So the Compendium Chutneys actually got 4.5 stars. The only thing that it lost a little bit on was the presentation because the page was a little bit on the bland side. It wasn't real flashy, but, you know, depending on how you look at it, that's a good thing because here's the product. Get it. It's $10. Buy it. You'll love it.
Right.
And the customer service lost a little bit because there wasn't a lot of it, but as we always say, if you need customer service for an ebook, you need to go back to school.
Right. Just don't buy an ebook.
Yeah.
There you go. So, all right. What's the next product we got going on? The
next product is one that I probably wouldn't use, but after looking at it, I kind of want to. Okay.
It is
RC Power Planes. And this one, again, the review is, again, at adphantom.com. This one received a total of 4.2 stars, so it was really good. The only thing it lost on was customer service because we had a little trouble getting in contact with them. But this product
is in contact. Good. Just checking.
Okay. That's quick speak.
That's right.
That was my auto adjuster from a microphone. It changes what I had to say. I tried to talk fast because we got to get back with Rachel Oring. But what we got here is a great value. You get a basic, an expert, or a master version. These are plans on how to save money to build your own RC plane. I had some videos of people who had used the plans, built their RC plane, and it looked like a lot of fun. Plus, it's pretty cheap. Yeah. Right now, you can get the master version for the expert price, which is at $47. So it's a little pricey, but if you're looking to build a hobby on building RC planes and has some great plans, a great way to get started, you're going to get all that information plus the master stuff for the price of the expert. So for under $50 is great. Again, this one through its online marketplace, you get a 60-day money-back guarantee. You're cheap if you go back on the Compendium and return that tail thing, but the $50 thing, I don't know. If it turns out to be crap, then, you know, you can send
it
back.
For sure. And for a hobby book, that $50 is pretty reasonable. That's pretty common.
Yeah, and it's a book, but it's plus some guides and their forums and other people who are using their RC planes and seeing some success with that. So you get that community as well that loves the RC plane stuff, which is a lot of fun. The weather's getting nice outside. You know, people are going out to fly kites. You can build a plane that maybe's got some razor blades on and go cut all the kites off. That's what I would do.
Yes, but go out and make those children cry.
Yes, exactly. But for someone who has never done any RC planes, after reviewing this product, I definitely wanted to go out and do that. So it was convincing to me. Great product, great return policy. It just lost a little bit in customer service, but, you know, you got to lose points somewhere, right? Because we can't have them all being perfect. For more reviews, deals, daily things from Ad Phantom, visit adphantom.com. Visit our premier partners and help support Ad Phantom. We'll be back in just a few seconds with Rachel Oring.
Thanks.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Again, we're talking with writer and comedian Rachel Oring. As we spoke earlier, writing and comedy are very connected. Do you feel that your writing really helps your stand-up?
Yeah, I think being a writer definitely helps my stand-up. If nothing else, other than the fact that I'm sort of in the habit of writing and writing things down on paper. Yeah, you know, it helps sort of getting that down and getting that out. And I don't want to sound like an asshole, but, you know, I have a really good way with words. And it's just really nice to sort of know that I have that capacity with words that being a writer has given me so that I can express myself.
That's good. Now, the same question in reverse. How do you feel that your stand-up affected your writing at all?
I would say it's affected my writing in that I'm way more self-conscious now about being funny in my writing. It's kind of like made it, wow, is that funny? And then I realized that I'm writing about green beans, and I'm like, does it have to be funny? And, you know, so I think it's freed up my writing because I've accidentally grown this sort of comedy persona through Twitter where I'm like this awkward person who says really weird things and goes on tangents, and I've seen that injected into my writing, my food writing, and it's funny. I really like it, and I feel like I'm sort of developing this weird, awkward, comedic voice that I'm putting into food writing, and I hope that in the food writing world, I don't think it's necessarily something that people have seen before, and people seem to like it.
I like it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. Can you tell us a little bit about your book?
Well, okay, so it's a long story, but my blog, Gagging Towards Bethlehem, last year, I've been pitching it as a nonfiction book since about 2008, while I was still in college, and I wrote a proposal for it and everything, and I've been pitching it to a ton of literary agents and publishers, and nothing ever really happened, and I had a couple people who wrote back and who were like, this is a great idea, but no publisher is going to like pay for you to go on this trip, especially these days, so I decided to make a Kickstarter project out of it and raise money. This is about a little more than a year ago, actually last August and September. And, you know, I started raising money and I had this Kickstarter project and I went on this local show called The State of Things and talked about it and had all these people contact me about being adult picky eaters. And they were like, we're so glad you're talking about this. This is awesome. And, you know, I had a couple donations, but it just sort of fizzled out. And I started working on this other television show for just a public access station in Chapel Hill. And, you know, I really enjoyed producing that. I really enjoyed doing that. So I was like, you know, this would make a much more interesting television show. And so basically I've written a treatment for it. And I'm actually currently working on a trailer right now to pitch to production companies. And so we'll see where it goes. So it started out as a book, but it'll be more interesting as a TV show. So
yeah, absolutely.
We'll see what happens. Maybe it'll turn into like an Anthony Bourdain thing where it's a TV show and a companion book.
There you go. And a companion cookbook.
Be great.
The Gagging Towards Bethlehem special edition cookbook.
Right?
I like it.
Yeah, so you can get a full
limited edition.
Yeah, limited like signed edition. I like
it.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah.
So what foods do you not like people to hassle you about?
Well, I don't really have this problem anymore because it's like, especially since it's sort of my persona, like everybody knows I'm a picky eater. So no one like super hassles me anymore, but I used to hate it. My mom used to hassle the shit out of me in the summer, you know, when they have really nice tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
She'd make tomato salad and be like, oh my God, this is so good. You have to try it. And she'd like totally get on my ass about it. And I was like, if you try to make me eat another tomato, I'm going to punch you in the throat. Like, I couldn't do it. But other than that, my mom never really hassled me so much about trying things I didn't like, which may have sort of lent to my picky eating a little more, but.
What other foods do you not like that are fairly normal for us normal people?
I don't like cucumbers. People are really confused by that. Cause they're like, cucumbers don't have any flavor. And I'm like, I know, why bother? And right. It's like, no, why? Just, you know, drink some water. It's the same as eating a cucumber. I hate blue cheese, like crumbled on a salad. Like that. Yeah,
I think a lot of people hate blue cheese. I think you're good there. I like it, but a lot of people hate blue cheese, so you're good.
Good, good, good. I don't like eggs.
That's weird.
I'm trying. Like, I'm on this diet where I have to eat a lot of protein, and, like, in the morning, it's really quick to eat eggs, so I make, like, scrambled eggs, and it's just, like, every morning, it's just, like, stuffing my face and, like, trying not to vomit it back up. I hate eggs. Well, I hate hard-boiled eggs.
How do you feel about omelets? Like, yeah, Cool Hand Luke.
What?
No, sorry, your Cool Hand Luke reference I liked, you know.
Just... Yeah, Cool Hand Luke ruined hard-boiled eggs for me, and then the subsequent jackass attempt with, like, oh, I have a blog post about that, actually. I can't eat hard-boiled eggs after that.
So how do you feel about omelets? I just asked.
Omelets are just, like, a bed of egg. I'm not into it. I'm okay if there's a crap ton of cheese in it. I'll choke it down. But if we're going like brunch food, I would rather have the lunch aspect of brunch than the breakfast. Right. So
so is it about the texture or flavor? Or what is it that, you know, I mean, like Jell-O, for example, you write about hating and despising Jell-O. Is it just the texture or the fake flavor or what is it?
Well, it's the texture. I have a pretty big problem with sort of jiggly stuff. So Jell-O, I can't deal with anything like custard.
Or fat people? Are you just like no fat friends?
Fat people, yeah, pretty much. Like, yeah, cellulite. I'm just gonna vomit. Like, I don't want to deal with that. But sort of gelatinous things, which eggs tend to fall into that category quite often, whether it's in custards or scrambled eggs. You know, it's just sort of a texture that kind of, like, hits my gag reflex, and I can't deal with it.
that's fair enough. I'm not super picky. A lot of the things that I have trouble eating are just because I got, you know, when you get the flu really bad and the last thing you ate was something very prevalent. Like, I can't do, like, those ghetto canned black olives. You know how that goes. You're like, no, never again. But, like, I have trouble eating mangoes. I think they taste like pine trees. And everyone's like, you're wrong. They're delicious. And I'm like, I know. And for me, salmon. Salmon's not.
I hate salmon.
I can't handle salmon. And everyone's like, you just haven't had good salmon. You're like, no, I used to live in the Pacific Northwest. Totally have had good salmon. And I keep trying because I'm like, I know my taste buds change every year, every 7 years. Yeah. I recently tried it again and it wasn't so bad, but again, I'd rather have like a salty ocean fish.
For me, it's about parts. I can't deal with parts, livers, organs. When I lived in South America, you get offered a lot of parts from people, and I always struggled with parts.
How do you feel about sausage, Ryan?
Well, the sausage is mystery parts, and it's always in one form, so I could deal with that.
Fair enough. It's in two.
You know, if it's spiced enough, it doesn't look like a part, then it's good. But if if you hand me a spicy liver on a plate, I'm gonna say
don't eat. The filter.
I'm not feeling too well.
Don't eat the filter. There's a reason.
Well, your book... I can imagine in South America, there's probably a lot of carts with like little like hearts on sticks and things. I don't.
Yes, they actually do. A chicken hearts grilled. That's actually not as bad as you would think, the chicken hearts, because they're so small. They're more like tasty, meaty morsels. Not something you're like, oh man, I can't wait to get some chicken hearts. And the first thing that goes through my head, too, is I see that skewer come out with like 100 hearts on them. I'm like, man, 100 chickens gave up their life for that. That was just crazy. But, you know, it's really interesting, actually, all the picky things that people have about what they eat. And when you're researching your book and your material for your TV show, there's a lot of articles out there about picky eaters.
There are.
Can you tell us a little bit about what people have found?
Well, it's funny because when I was originally doing the research for my book, I scoured the internet for articles articles about it, and there was one article that had been written in Psychology Today like a year prior about picky eaters, and there's this one guy that's in all of the stories. I think his name is Bob or something, and he's like the go-to picky eater interviewee, and he only eats French fries or something. And so there's this one article, and then it's like in the last 3 years, everybody has sort of like magically discovered that there are adult picky eaters, and everyone's writing about it and finding more people who will only eat French fries. And, you know, so it's really interesting, and it really makes me feel good to sort of see this nascent movement. What with the woman I interviewed with on State of Things, she works at Duke, and she is in charge of a finicky eating in adult study. And so they, you know, currently they're just working on like a survey, but I'm really excited because they're in the beginning steps of their research, and I'm sort of wanting to explore it deeper. And so I'm really excited to see what they discover and sort of working with them, and hopefully for my TV show and my subsequent limited edition companion book, apparently.
There you go.
Sort of spearhead like this movement and see like spectrum. You know, it's a spectrum, and fortunately for me, I'm in the middle of it, but there are so many people on the extremes.
Pretty soon we'll see support groups for picky eaters and what they can do to
overcome
those challenges. You've got a pretty interesting method, actually. I read your proposal in your chapters for your TV show and your book, and you talked about what you were going to do to overcome your gag reflex. So tell us a little bit about your plan. And listen up, folks out there who have trouble with your gag reflex, she has a solution right here. So go for it.
Well, so I got this idea after reading an article in New York Magazine about Coney Island. The guy was talking about, because they have a school for, like, freaks, where I guess they teach you how to, like, drill through your penis or whatever they do. I don't know. But he was talking about how they were teaching them how to swallow swords. And basically what you do is you bend a coat hanger into a sword shape, and you basically just jam it down your throat until your gag reflex is, like, completely desensitized. And that's how they learn how to swallow swords. So I thought, you know, in order to overcome my sensitive gag reflex, I would learn to swallow swords, but I will only do that if there's a camera crew following me. So,
I might have to get you in touch with some producers because I want to see this process on television.
Right?
It sounds like great TV.
That's what I'm saying. And even in the book proposal, I think I said, like, this sounds retarded, but it's going to be really funny. So basically, they give you a coat hanger shaped like a sword, and they fit, like, four people around a trash can. And you basically just jam it down your throat, and if you need to throw up, you throw up in the trash can until have no gag reflex. I think that's how porn stars do it, too, but I can't be sure. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, obviously, your goal is to get this funded, this TV show funded and going. What is your idea behind the TV show?
You know, my idea is to go to, like, Italy and see how gorgonzola is made and see if that'll help me overcome hating blue cheese, or go to the Pacific Northwest and catch a giant salmon in a boat and then, you know, have someone cook it nice for me and sort of overcome that.
I hope that works because I think a lot of people would not want to eat some things anymore after seeing how they're made.
Right? Yes.
Well, I'm not going to go to, like, a hot dog factory or anything, so.
I've actually seen that. It's not as terrible as you might think. It's just kind of really finely ground meat shoved into tubes. It's kind of not as...
Are you how it's made addict as well?
I am. I'm a huge nerd.
I'm like, so addicted to that show. And every time I watch it, all I can think of is, like, if I smoked weed, all I would do would just get blazed as and watch how it's made for, like, 8 hours.
It's
like,
true, and it's always on at that time of day where there's nothing else to do. It's like your day off, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're like, oh, how it's made, it's totally on for the next 3 hours.
Yeah.
I find myself going to the store, and you'll see a product, and you'll want to turn to the person next to you. You know what, I know how they make this. Right. I know how this arrived, because I saw it on How It's Made yesterday.
Although, I do have to say, as far as that goes, the most terrifying thing on labels is when it's labeled like beef. Or pork. Well, because beef includes anything that is on the cow. Like, blanket statement, it's like, this burger is made out of beef. you really want your labels to be more specific than that. Like, this is part of the chuck roast. If it just says beef, it's like, well, that hamburger is going to be... Yeah, exactly. That burger is probably mostly liver, heart, and intestine, you know?
Yeah.
So, something to look forward to.
The weirdest thing for me was always on the pizza Lunchables, where it's the pepperoni one, where it said pepperoni-flavored sausage.
Ugh,
and I never could wrap my head around that. I was like, what is in this? I'm still going to eat it.
Still gonna eat
a lot of flavor. That's all it is.
Something red and some monosodium glutamate. That's what's in it.
Well, Rachel, we want to congratulate you for all your achievements so far, your awards, and we wish you the best on moving forward with your TV show and on stage. I mean, frankly, it just seems like you've got a lot of great talent and aspirations.
So
tell us, no problem. So tell us, would you prefer to obtain your fame in the food industry, the comedy stage, or some odd Gallagher-type tomato-smashing cross of the two?
I definitely want to be famous for both. I've wanted to have a food show since I was like 5, a cooking show, and I want to have a cooking show, and I'd love to achieve my fame for that, but being a funny cooking show person, you know? But I fully plan on doing both, you know? If I have to have a cooking show and then, you know, go do a stand-up gig just so people think I'm legit, I don't care. I love doing both, and I'll be a comedy writer for myself.
There you go.
Well, we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much, you guys. This has been really awesome, so thank you.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Rachel, again, we thank you for joining us this afternoon and allowing us to tell your story. Now, John, I'm kind of in the mood for a tomato egg sandwich with Jell-O for dessert. What do you think?
Sounds delicious. How about you, Rachel?
You guys.
All right, we'll be right back after this short break with our musical guest. Ryan, the other day my friend came up to me and said, John, I love the Ed Phantom Show. What more can I do to support you and your process of this wonderful show?
It's so funny that you say that, John, because I have hundreds, literally hundreds of people asking me every day, how can we support the Ed Phantom Show? Well, ladies and gentlemen, to all our adoring fans out there, this is how you can support Ed Phantom. As you know, we're partnered with iTunes, Newegg, Priceline, Groupon, Logitech, GoDaddy, Barnes & Noble, and MusiciansFriend.com.
Wow. That's a lot of sponsors. What does that mean for them?
Okay, well, what it means, one, is that we've been hard at work and that our show and our website looked great and they wanted to partner with us to bring us great products. So what that means for them is you can go to our website, adphantom.com. At the very bottom, you're going to see each one of these company logos. As you click on them, you're going to be taken to a site on Ad Phantom that has specific exclusive deals that are supplied to us by these partners. Even if we don't have exclusive ones at that time, you can still go to that site and visit some of the information from that particular product. When you click on that, you're going to go to their site, and anything that you would already purchase, musicians out there buying new equipment, if you're into books, you can go to Barnes & Noble, if you're just simply buying through iTunes, you're going to be taken to the partner's own website. But by purchasing that product and going to us first, you help support Ad Phantom so that we can bring you great content.
That's pretty awesome. So basically all the person has to do is go to our website, click on the great website that they were already planning on buying products from and just buy through the website. And it costs the same amount as they would do it normally, right?
Absolutely. It doesn't cost anything extra. And on top of that, because of Ad Phantom's format, we work on promoting small businesses and large corporations. By creating that network of people, we help support the little guy. So you're also going to see your local deals and stuff that maybe is somebody who's just advertising their own product. So basically what it means is if you have a band, if you have a large corporation, a small company, maybe just one little product that you're trying to get some more exposure, you can visit us at phantom.com, help support the little guy and the big guy and the musician and the weird guy, and ultimately support Ad Phantom.
That's right. AdPhantom.com. Finding the people behind the ads.
Throwing on a little more coal. The
Forming over a decade ago, Sweet Potato Pie mixes a classy blend of bluegrass, country, and gospel music all together in a style called Sweetgrass, with Sonia Stead on guitar, Crystal Richardson on banjo, Katie Springer on fiddle, and Sandy Whitley on upright bass. This band performs all over the East Coast, but their hearts are still in the Carolinas. Being an all-female group, their unique sound revolves around their sparkling three-part harmonies and their addictive beats and performances. Having five great albums under their belt, I challenge you to not find yourself tapping your toes or bouncing in your seat while listening to their music. I certainly can't help it, which is another reason why our show is audio only. Sweet Potato Pie currently records with Mountain Fever Records and has had several chart-topping songs on bluegrass and gospel radio. They were a finalist in the International Bluegrass Association, or SPGMA, band competition, and had done several worldwide radio broadcasts from historic locations in Nashville, Tennessee. They've also taped a show for PBS, which will air in 2012. Sponsored by the North Carolina Sweet Potato Growers, this band anticipates their newest album release in early 2012. For more information about Sweet Potato Pie, links to their live show schedule, and where you can purchase their albums, visit adphantom.com. Special thanks to all our guests and all the staff here at Ad Phantom. We once again thank you for joining us and hope you enjoyed the show. Are you in a band or have a great show idea? We love feedback, so please visit our website, www.adphantom.com. Leave a comment, become our Facebook fan, follow us on Twitter, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Also, don't forget to look at our daily product deals. We'll now close with one of our favorite tracks from our musical guest.
Wide. No matter where I travel to or where my body is. rooted in my heart is the rhythm to my soul. The songs from Dolly Parton all the way to J.D. Crow. 'Cause I'm a bluegrass girl. Its music fills my world. From the mountains to the cities or across the ocean wide. No matter where I travel to or where my buddy lies.
And Phantom, finding the people behind the ads.